From Greenville to Hollidaysburg, Indiana to Williamsport, this is Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, amid calls from Governor Tom Wolf for higher taxes and more spending, the state budget process is grinding along in Harrisburg. Nate Benefield from the Commonwealth Foundation is here with an update. Sex trafficking is a growing problem. Fresh Start Healing Heart is here to help those trying to change their lives. Joe Geiger from the First Nonprofit Foundation has Sheila Rumling in the Community Benefit Spotlight. And Pennsylvanians will have the opportunity in the May primary election to amend the state constitution to bring some balance to the exercise of emergency powers. Ashley Klingensmith of Americans for Prosperity PA has details on this week's Lincoln Radio Journal commentary. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll get to Nate Benefield of the Commonwealth Foundation in just a couple of minutes, but first, news headlines from patownhall.com. Although revenues for the current fiscal year are running more than $900 million over projections, Pennsylvania is in line to receive more than $13 billion from the coronavirus stimulus package approved by Congress this past week. According to the Tax Foundation, that is 10,000% more than needed to cover last year's $67 million revenue loss. The stimulus package was approved by Congress on a straight party line vote, with Republicans saying it amounted to a massive bailout of states like Pennsylvania. Only about 9% of the $1.9 trillion stimulus bill will actually go to fighting the COVID-19 pandemic. In political news this week, Montgomery County real estate developer Jeff Bartos, who was the GOP nominee for lieutenant governor in 2018, officially announced his candidacy for the U.S. Senate. Incumbent Senator Pat Toomey has announced his retirement, so the field is wide open for the election, which will be held next year. Bartos most recently ran a nonprofit called the 30-Day Fund, which raised money to provide grants to small businesses to help them survive COVID-19 restrictions. He becomes the first Republican to officially enter the race. Meanwhile, Republicans in the 48th State Senate District based in Lebanon County have nominated businessman Chris Gebhard as their candidate in a special election to be held in May. This to fill a seat that became vacant with the untimely death in January of Senator Dave Arnold. Former State Representative Ed Krebs has filed to run as an independent for that seat. Democrats have not yet selected a nominee to run in the heavily Republican district. And in the 22nd State Senate District in the Scranton area, State Representative Kyle Mullins says he will seek the Democratic nomination to fill the seat that became vacant due to the resignation earlier this month of State Senator John Blake. That district leans Democratic. Read about all things Pennsylvania at patownhall.com. Governor Tom Wolf is pushing hard for a massive hike in the personal income tax rate to fund his calls for a significant increase in state spending. Lawmakers are now combing through the proposed state budget and are asking a lot of questions. Here to look at where we stand in the state budget process is Nate Benefield. Nate is Vice President and Chief Operating Officer of the Commonwealth Foundation. Nate, welcome back to Lincoln Radio Journal. Nate, before we get into some of the commentary on the budget, for our listeners who maybe haven't heard yet, can you give us just a very brief overview of the state's budget situation and what the governor is proposing, particularly relative to tax increases?
So the governor has come out with a new budget for next fiscal year, proposing spending a little over $40 billion, which is a pretty significant increase over the prior year, and is proposing as part of that to increase the personal income tax, which is the tax most people pay on their wages and salaries, proposing that to increase by 46%, while also trying to expand a program that is intended for those in poverty for tax forgiveness, really trying to extend that to give more people tax relief, but in his own words, trying to make our tax code progressive, which Our Constitution actually says it's illegal. We have to have a flat tax that is fair for all people to pay the same rate. The government's trying to create a progressive tax structure that raises taxes by about $3 billion.
You mentioned the increase in the personal income tax, Nate, and of course, we all pay that on our salaries, on our wages. That also has an impact on particularly small business, does it not?
Yeah, absolutely, that most small businesses pay the personal income tax. If you're in a sole owner of a business or in a partnership or an LLC, those are paid at the personal income tax level. So a lot of the restaurants, a lot of the dry cleaning, a lot of the local shops, are the mom-and-pop shops, all of those owners pay the personal income tax. So that is the people who are going to be hit hard by this tax increase. And as you can tell, this is the time of after the pandemic and after the recession. A lot of those businesses are just now getting off their feet and are going to be the ones hit with a tax increase if this proposal goes through.
I was going to say, the list of businesses, the types of businesses that are going to be hit hardest by this proposed tax hike, Nate, seem to be those that have already been hit the hardest by the pandemic and by the governor's draconian shutdowns. This has caused a loss of, what, 500,000 jobs in Pennsylvania? Is that going to have on our ability to recover those jobs?
Well, it absolutely hampers our ability to recover and really puts those businesses at an increasing disadvantage. Number one, small businesses can't deduct their losses from 2020, so a lot of them were hit hard, aren't able to carry those losses over the way the larger corporations are able to do so. And the reality is, we are currently right now having lost 500,000 jobs since last February. The Independent Fiscal Office did a report projecting it's going to take 6 years at the current trajectory for those jobs to come back. And the governor's proposal is just going to make it even harder by proposing even a minimum wage increase that is really, really does hit the small businesses hardest and makes it harder for them to hire workers.
Going to the issue of the proposed minimum wage increase, Governor Wolf, like left-leaning elected officials all across the country, have made this one of their signature issues. In terms of that job loss, Nate, and in bringing those jobs back, a minimum wage increase, that would be a further hit to business, would it not?
Absolutely, and it really is a hit, I mean, largely to small businesses and largely the workers who are hit, because we talk about the minimum wage, it really is a starting wage. It is for young people in high school and college age getting their first job. Those are primarily people who are earning minimum wage and getting that. It makes it more expensive to hire them, and those who don't have a lot of skill or add a lot of value are the ones who are going to be cut off with either fewer hours or fewer jobs available. And it doesn't lead to any of the results that the governor and a lot of the left-wing groups that predict. It doesn't reduce poverty. It really doesn't create jobs and doesn't improve our economy. There are better ways that we certainly agree and we want to see people earning more. But the result, the way to do that is to let the market work.
We are talking with Nate Benefield. Nate is the Vice President and Chief Operating Officer at the Commonwealth Foundation. We're talking about the proposed Pennsylvania state budget for fiscal year 2021-2022. As we look forward to that new budget, Nate, let's look at the current budget. And it's interesting, at the moment, revenue is coming in significantly above projections. How much is it coming in above projections?
It's a few hundred million above projections. And remember, these projections, because the last year's budget was kind of delayed, they actually passed a six-month budget and then finished it off again in November. So these are projections just since November that have come in ahead of estimates. I mean, the economy is doing a little better than expected, but not quite as much to match the governor's appetite for increasing spending.
Speaking of which, with all these tax hikes that the governor is proposing, what sort of spending increases is he proposing again this year? He usually has a rather long list of those.
Yeah, he's proposing about a $5 billion increase in spending. Big increases in education is really one of his big focal points. He wants to do almost a $2 billion increase for public schools and allocate it, keeping every school harmless so they don't lose money, but doing by this fair funding formula, which is supposedly money follows the child a little bit to public schools. But it is, well, even if you've lost students, you still get the same amount of funding. That's driving his big increase. The irony, he's doing this for school districts, but he's also proposing cuts to charter schools and more regulations and limits on private schools and tax credit scholarship programs. So really favoring one type of student and one type of school over another, very politically driven in a spending increase.
Well, given the campaign contributions he's received from the Pennsylvania State Teachers Unions, it's obvious it's payback time there, and also with the COVID vaccine, but that also is a subject for another day. Let's talk a bit about the coronavirus recovery program recently passed by Congress. And Senator Pat Toomey, Nate, has claimed that this is nothing more than a funding of a left-wing wish list. It includes billions of dollars, especially for blue states, and I think Pennsylvania is included in that. So it looks like Pennsylvania state government might be in for quite a windfall from the federal government. Is it really needed in view of the fact that revenue's coming in above projections already?
No, I mean, it's very much not needed. And it is, you know, the formula that they passed in the Congress was very much loaded towards blue states. So California and New York get more than their fair share. Pennsylvania does benefit a little bit, whereas other states are getting a lot less than what they would on a per capita basis. But the amount of money we're getting is far and above any revenue losses that we've had because of the recession. And even while the previous relief is still sitting there in the state treasury, hasn't even been spent yet, now there's going to be more money coming in from Washington, D.C., and it's really this is money that we're borrowing from the next generation, imposing more debt on our children and grandchildren. But the reality is we don't know how to even use that. And they even put, you know, Congress put some limitations on it, so it can't be used for tax relief, which would benefit Pennsylvanians. It probably can't be used to pay off some of our debt. And the question is, and really this is, I think, the biggest fear is it going to be going into new programs that when this federal money goes away that the state is going to be on the hook for and state taxpayers are going to have to pay more to keep those programs in place if we're using these temporary federal dollars to create new programs?
Well, we certainly learned that lesson relative to public education during the last recession. In terms of the process, the budget has to be approved constitutionally by the 1st of July. They don't always quite get there, so where are we in the process, and what can we look forward to over the next couple of months?
Right now, the governor proposes his budget, and he did in February. There have been hearings in both the House and now the Senate on different aspects of the budget, having each department come in. They've had hearings on both the tax increase proposals and hearing from small businesses and from employers across the state. And really, it is now going to be in the legislature's hands to introduce their own budget legislation. And I suspect it's going to be dramatically different than what the governor proposed. I don't see a lot of appetite for massive tax increases at this time, but it is kind of now in the legislature's hand to start the process of introducing a budget bill, moving that along. A lot of times that happens very close to that budget deadline you mentioned, Loman. So a lot of times there's not a lot that happens until we get into late June on that.
Again, we have been talking with Nate Benefield. Nate is the Vice President and Chief Operating Officer at the Commonwealth Foundation for Public Policy Alternatives, the full name of it. Nate, tell us a little bit about Commonwealth Foundation. Also, where can folks go on the web? You have written extensively on the state budget, a whole ton of research there. So where can folks find it?
Yeah, Commonwealth Foundation, we are a state-based organization focused on Pennsylvania that identifies and pushes free market alternatives so that all Pennsylvanians can flourish. And we have more analysis on the state budget and other issues on our website at www.commonwealthfoundation.org.
Nate Benefield of the Commonwealth Foundation. Nate, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Loman.
Helping people escape from the sex industry and rebuild their lives is the mission of Fresh Start Healing Heart. Sheila Rumling is executive director of the organization, and Joe Geiger from the First Nonprofit Foundation has her in the Community Benefit Spotlight. Joe?
Thank you, Loman, and thank you, Sheila, for being a guest on the Lincoln Radio program today.
Thank you for having me.
Sheila, share a little bit with our listeners a little bit about your organization and how it got started and where you are in the business model in terms of evolution with your business.
Well, Fresh Start Healing Heart was started back in 2015, actually out of some of my own personal tragedies. And due to that, the Lord had pressed it upon my heart that I would help others in the domestic violence sexual assault industry. I just wasn't sure where. In 2014, you tapped me on the shoulder and let me know that it was going to be the human trafficking industry. And Fresh Start Healing Heart was born. As of March, we are now 6 years old. We have had the blessings of being able to, as a nonprofit, not only work nationally and have ambassadors all over, but to touch the lives of 20 people and house 10 and educate over 7,500 people in a very short period of time, I call it, because we're a very small organization. So we've done quite a bit so far, and we are very blessed with that.
I was thinking about this interview on the way over to the studio and thought, we see bits and pieces of trafficking on television. There are the crime shows now. We see posters in the community now and then. Tell us a little bit about what that nefarious industry is all about. What is its threat to our society?
The threat to our society is one that over 70% of those who are trafficked here in the United States are actually American citizens. And too often it's portrayed as it being foreign or migrant workers, things like that when it comes down to the labor trafficking industry. But really, it's our own family, our children, our grandchildren, our brothers, our sisters, people here in the United States. And that is the real threat, is that we are not staying focused on that it's right here. It's in our own backyards. It's our own family members.
Why don't we see it? How does it happen? And how is it so much under the radar unless it happens to someone in your family or a very close friend?
Because it's hard to detect. A lot of the times it's a situation where let's take sexual assault industry. We're going to take it that way, the commercial sex industry, because it's a little easier for people to understand that than it is the labor industry. So let me explain with this one. You may see someone with pornography and thinking that the people in the porn industry are doing it because they want to. And a good majority of the time, that's not the case. When it comes down to prostituting or strip clubs, things like that, a lot of people believe that those people are doing it because they want to. That's generally not the case. There is a small amount that actually are doing it because they want to. Some will believe they want that they put themselves in that position and then they're choosing to do that. But, you know, even with the clients that we have worked with, the more I dig into their story, the more I find how they were actually coerced or forced into the industry. And so it was not something they chose to do. It was the guilt and shame that kept them there.
Without sharing any confidentiality, can you give us an example of a story or two of how that coercion occurred? How do people not see that coming?
A lot of boyfriending in is what we see right now. And this is in the commercial sex industry. Labor side is very, very large also, so I don't want to not give any tribute to that. But with the commercial sex industry, we're seeing a lot of boyfriending in. So either side, female or male, where they are falling in love with somebody and hanging out with them, enjoying that person. And the next thing you know, there might be drug habits or partying habits from past pains and trauma. A lot of people that get sucked into the human trafficking industry are not like the movie Taken, where it was just some fluke situation. It's majority have a past of already trauma and pain that has not been dealt with. And so there's a lot of easy target there where there's like this tag on the forehead that says vulnerability, and they look for that. And so what happens is they start to provide for them, sell them a dream. It might be a dream of modeling. It might be a dream of a better job, a better life. It might be just that, you know, independence and that they can do what they want. And then they get them to believe that they really do love them. And then from there, the next thing you know, it's, we need money. We don't have any money. If you do this for me this time, we'll be able to pay this bill, and that's it. And the next thing you know, they're having them do it often.
This is Joe Geiger on the Lincoln Radio Program. My guest today is Sheila Rumling, and she's the director of the organization Fresh Start Healing Heart. Sheila, my perception prior to the interview was that a lot of it was abduction, but you're saying a lot of it is very process-oriented and orientation-oriented.
Very much so. The danger today is that our children are being approached by their phones, by their video games, all these different things. And so it's easier for predators to get a hold of people now and to entrap them. And the next thing you know, they're running away to this person and being trafficked.
Then how do they find their way to your program, or how do you find their way to your program?
We are partnered with multiple different organizations, as well as law enforcement, hospitals, different entities that will either refer them to us. The domestic violence shelter might turn around, and as they're getting to know a client in their shelter more, they may realize they've been trafficked, and they give us a call. So we do a lot of partnering around the nation to ensure that if there's a situation that we can help out in some way or at least refer them to a program that can if we're unable to at the time. One of the greatest ones is that we are also connected to the homeless. And so we might get calls for someone looking for a shelter, and we're able to do our own intake to see if they've been trafficked so that we can either help them or refer them to another shelter.
This has to be very demanding kind of work. At the end of the day, how do you know you're making a difference?
Our program so far has not only seen young ladies that have been able to restore relationships with their children, learn healthy boundaries, teach them to their children, which means we're changing generations, not just one life. We've seen careers obtained. We've seen debt reduced and gone. We've seen addictions overcome. We've seen healing beginning, family restoration with family members. We've seen the mind start to heal so much that they can see where that life was and what was going on. They don't want any part of any of it anymore. We've seen baptisms. We've seen salvations. We have seen people smile again that are generally smiling and not giving a fake smile, and that they feel comfortable in their own skin and who they are. And that's when we know we've made a difference, because that means that we know that everything that they have just overcome, they don't desire to ever want it back again, because they no longer feel that loneliness. They feel a sense of meaning and purpose in their life. And that's all the difference in the world.
This is Joe Geiger in the Lincoln Radio Program. My guest today is Sheila Rumling, the Executive Director of Fresh Start Healing Heart. And you can get information on that organization from their website, freshstarthealingheart.org. Sheila, I want to thank you for being a guest on the program. This is a difficult subject, a subject that it's a shame that we even have to be talking about. But thank you, and God bless you for what you're doing. Back to you, Loman.
Governor Tom Wolf has exercised unchecked emergency powers during the COVID-19 pandemic, shutting the legislature out of the process. But two proposed state constitutional amendments could bring about some balance. Ashley Klingensmith from Americans for Prosperity Pennsylvania explains on this Lincoln Radio Journal commentary.
March 6th, 2020 was the date Governor Tom Wolf signed his first proclamation of disaster emergency in response to the COVID-19 pandemic. At the time, the 90-day window, which extended through June of 2020, seemed like an eternity. Nearly 1 year later, on February 19th, 2021, he extended the order for a fourth time. But the great news is that just a few weeks beforehand, the Pennsylvania General Assembly voted to place two questions on the May 2021 primary ballot that would limit these emergency declarations to 21 days, down from 90, and reassert the legislature into the conversation for extended time beyond that three-week window. For a constitutional amendment, which is what, if approved by the voters, the ballot questions would provide for, legislation must pass both chambers in the same form two consecutive legislative sessions. Through the 2019-2020 legislative session and this session, the General Assembly has done the work to provide us, the voters, a final say in restoring balance to how emergencies are managed in Pennsylvania by making certain that we, the people, through their representatives in the General Assembly, have a voice in the length of a declared emergency. Naturally, the governor and his administration opposes the amendments. His Department of State and Attorney General have produced ballot language that includes charged wording of the questions, leading to the potential of voters thinking that the General Assembly might reflexively terminate disaster declarations once they expire, regardless of the facts of a given situation. But nothing could be further from the General Assembly's intent. Instead, the proposed amendments recognize that while the decision to impose emergency declarations and the direction of state government's response must rest with an executive official, in this case the governor, who is held accountable by the electorate, members of the General Assembly, as the most direct representatives of the people, must have the responsibility to oversee and participate in a governor's response to an emergency. To date, such attempts to participate in the COVID-19 response by members of the General Assembly and their constituents have largely been rebuffed or ignored entirely by Governor Wolf and his administration, with devastating consequences for PA families and small businesses. The two proposed constitutional amendments are intended to accomplish this by 1. Limiting the duration of any emergency declared by the governor to 21 days unless expressly extended by the General Assembly, and 2. Preventing any substantially similar emergency from being declared once the first declaration expires, unless expressly authorized by the General Assembly. The above provisions help to uphold the principle that the exercise of governmental authority in an emergency must be properly constrained so that the rights and privileges of individuals and private groups are not arbitrarily or unduly infringed. Appropriate checks on a governor's ability to impose and extend emergency declarations must be added to the Pennsylvania Constitution to guard against the risks associated with investing any single individual with the power to act under emergency conditions, risks that have manifested themselves during this governor's COVID-19 emergency declaration in the form of small businesses destroyed, jobs and livelihoods lost, children's educational and emotional development disrupted, amongst many other things. Americans for Prosperity Pennsylvania intends to educate Pennsylvania voters about the true intent and effect of the two proposed constitutional amendments and why a yes vote on both makes sense for the future of Pennsylvania. We look forward to seeing each of you at the polls on May 18th. So we the people can have the final say over our lives and our livelihoods. I'm Ashley Klingensmith, State Director with Americans for Prosperity Pennsylvania. Like us on Facebook at AFPPA and follow us on Twitter at AFPPennsylvania.
If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our websites, LincolnRadioJournal.com and LincolnInstitute.org. For 26 years, Lincoln Radio Journal has been heard on public affairs-minded radio stations throughout the Commonwealth, including WCAT-FM and WHMX-FM in Camp Hill, along with WQXA-FM in York, Pennsylvania. The Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations, including the Houston Foundation of Coatesville, the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, and the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, all of whom have helped to underwrite the costs of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Lincoln Broadcast Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal. Plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania.